Rise up!
Team
Rise up!
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site for the USA Today family of sites. My co-host, as almost always, is Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and this is episode 264. More importantly, this is our second draft preview show of the season. Last week, in episode 263, we talked about offense. Tonight, recording on a Tuesday night, we talk defense. Next week and a week from now, we will have our yearly mock draft of the first round of how we think the draft will play out, because the NFL draft is next week, and then we will have another show to react to that. Seth, we are almost there. In fact, by the time this episode drops, Steve Keim is actually going to address the media, which means their draft board is either already set or just about to be. They've got their horizontal and their vertical. They probably haven't put together their top 100 or whatever it is that they do every year.
Yeah, it's getting close. I mean, we're getting down to the nitty gritty, and I feel like this has been, you know, probably for everybody the hardest, kind of longest wait, because you don't have anything else. And so, like, that's what you're looking forward to right now is the 2020 NFL draft. And so these next, you know, whenever this comes out, 8-7 days, like a week from now, it feels like a year from now at this point. Like, it just, it's dragging, and you can only read so many mock drafts or do so many simulations before you're like, okay, I need the real thing. But we don't even have our, you know, normal day-to-day life. And so, you know, if the NFL wanted to be really nice, instead of keeping the draft, they should have moved it up 2 weeks and given us something.
I think the general managers of the league would have gone on a mutiny. I mean, the owners want it. Roger Goodell wants it. It's the player personnel that probably would have had a mutiny at that point. Like, the fact that someone was talking about, well, with this scenario, we need to have 10 rounds of the draft. Like, wait, what? Though, I'm actually pretty intrigued as to, with this whole virtual setup, how messy it's going to be with the undrafted signees, because as I can't remember where I saw it, but the way things work with these undrafted, you've got, it's lightning fast. These players end up committing to, because they haven't signed anything, they commit to two or three teams sometimes. You've got teams who are making offers to two or three different players and then have to rescind offers because they got two guys that were ahead of them. And so it's going to be a mess. They're going to have to figure out how this goes, and that'll be for the Cardinals as well. They're going to have a medium-sized undrafted rookie situation. Right now they've got 24 roster spots as of right now, so they've got six draft picks, which means 18 undrafted rookies plus all the guys that you're going to bring in for tryouts, which is really going to be interesting. Those, honestly, these unsigned undrafted rookies are really going to be hurt this year because they're not going to get that rookie camp on the field where these tryout players bump out other guys. Now, they'll probably have their chance later on because people come out and try out and things like that, but it's going to be a really interesting offseason. But starting with what we're going to do in this show tonight, in episode 264, we're talking defense. We're going to talk about the Cardinals' defensive needs in the draft, and then we're going to go position group by position group. We're just going to go starting at the defensive interior, talk about, in which each position group, like we did last week, we will talk about the names at the top of the draft that are worth discussing, that the Cardinals potentially could potentially be in play in the first round with the eighth pick or a trade back, which looks to me and Seth right now could very well happen. And then look at players that could be in play for the Cardinals with their later picks. And we might even talk a little second round, because the kind of the rumors out there is if there's a team like the Bucks, Broncos, and Falcons willing to move up, the Cardinals might be able to snag a second round pick in a trade down. So we're going to start defensive needs. We'll talk defensive interior, defensive line. We'll talk edge, the red pass rushers, off the ball linebackers, cornerbacks, and then safety. So that's what we'll start with. Taking off with the defensive needs, Seth, if you were to rank the priority of positions for the Cardinals so far, how would you rank them from the highest priority to lowest priority when it comes to the Cardinals' defensive needs in the draft?
I would almost have to work backwards, like, to kind of go through it so and talk it through. So you look at it and you probably would say safety's the group that you're most comfortable with. I think that is with the idea that Buda Baker will be retained. Obviously, he's going into his fourth year with the team, so you've got Buda, you've got Jalen Thompson, who, you know, is penciled in right now to be their free safety starter. You've got Deontay Thompson, who was working in quite nicely last year. Then you've got, you know, your backups and younger guys. So I don't think you would want to add any more youth to that group. I mean, you're always going to see a defensive back slash corner slash safety type drafted just because they're so essential for special teams units. But I would put that probably the lowest. The next group I would probably put as the lowest in terms of immediate need would be edge, because you do have Chandler Jones and Devon Kennard. Their backups are okay. Obviously, they're going to try Hassan Reddick out there again. And so I think Hassan right now is your lead backup. But we've heard, you know, whispers that that could be in flux. But I think from an immediate need standpoint, again, Jones and Kennard make it tough for other guys to get snaps, and so you're really talking about only a rotational player. So unless you're going to upgrade from Kennard, because let's face it, there's like two people in the NFL that you can say are an upgrade from Chandler Jones, then and really that's what Chase Young in the draft for an upgrade from Kennard right now. So you're probably not going to draft anybody again as a need. So I would say, you know, start safety, then edge. You could probably even flip those two, and I wouldn't get upset. Then it gets interesting, because I think you've got a bunch of unknown slash one-year guy slash injury concerns. I would probably put inside linebacker next, simply because of the amount of investment they've made in Jordan Hicks and now Devondre Campbell. Campbell, I'm not going to say has to play, but it's going to be very not great if they're trying to get a rookie. And let's just assume that the Cardinals don't make a move back, and so they sit at eight. And they, you know, their next pick is 72. It's going to be really hard to justify a third round rookie with the idea that Isaiah Simmons isn't the pick at eight to justify them playing over Campbell. So again, when you're talking about immediate need, I would say linebacker would be your third. So that leaves your interior defensive line and your corners. Now, I think the best talent right now is at the cornerback spots in Patrick Peterson, Byron Murphy, Robert Alford. Chris Jones showed a little bit last year. You know, they, Kevin Peterson's still out there if they want to, you know, retain him. So it's not like they're barren. On the defensive line, they've invested a ton. Jordan Phillips, obviously, is the big name. They still have Corey Peters. You know, they drafted Zach Allen in the top 100 last year, and they were very, very high on Zach Allen. So, and then they still have Michael Dogby and Miles Brown that they like kind of in that rotation. Corners, I would say your top three are unquestionably better, but I say the need for corners in the NFL today and your what looks to be better depth along the defensive line, in the sense that your talent on the defensive line from your starters to your backups is maybe not as much of a drop off as what you're going to see if, you know, God forbid Patrick Peterson goes down or gets suspended again, Byron Murphy goes down, or Robert Alford goes down. So again, I think it would be a coin flip. I think again, your high end is better on your corners, but you're very shallow there. I think you need a premier talent along the defensive line, but I think you have better depth. So I would list corner as perhaps the greatest need, but it's, you know, 1A and 1B as far as the interior defensive line goes, that, you know, those three down linemen in the Cardinals 34.
And for me, I'm going to flip around those two top needs for you. I'm going to say defensive line for me becomes the more immediate need in the draft, because I think you need a player who can have more impact now. Obviously, like you said, Seth, the corner depth, like they're solid at the starters, but it gets very shallow after that. You don't necessarily want the other guys behind them playing. Chris Jones did okay. He's not a guy that you want to hang your hat on in terms, but Patrick Peterson, Robert Alford, Byron Murphy, you feel comfortable with those, that trio. As opposed to what you have on the defensive line, you've got Jordan Phillips, Corey Peters, and then you've got guys, you've got a Zach Allen or a Jonathan Bullard that you can say, okay, you're going to feel comfortable with that, but you obviously, when you've got Zach Allen in his basically 3.25 games of production, they really liked him, but in 3.25 games, he really didn't produce much. Obviously, the injury played into that, and he was thrust into a much larger role than he was anticipated early on. And I like the team, still like the potential there, but then your choice is him or Jonathan Bullard, who has been, he's been a guy in the league. Now, I will say that he had in 9 games last season, it was his finest season in the pros. He just never has really produced much. So you draft a guy, whether it's round 1, round 3, you potentially could get a guy who could be more impactful now. And then on top of that, you've got a Corey Peters who's in the last year of his contract, and you've got your Jordan Phillips, and so you've got young guys. So I'm going to put defensive line as their number one priority, and then I go to cornerback. Now, I'm not super, super confident about the position, because we're coming off a year about Robert Alford and a broken leg, coming off of a year where he had a high ankle sprain most of the year. So you see, well, what's happening to his body. He's a solid starter. He's actually under contract for 2021 as well. So it is, if he plays well, you're actually okay. That said, you have both Robert Alford, who's older, and Patrick Peterson entering the final year of his deal. And so obviously you want to have a starting capable or someone who could be a starter at least in 2021. So cornerback for me becomes priority number two. And then I'm going to kind of go in that same order. I think edge is the more pressing than inside backer. And it, for me, I think it comes down to the premium position that it is. It is harder to find a solid pass rusher than it is to find a guy you can plug in at inside backer. And Vance Joseph views his defenses like that schematically, because you can scheme, if you've got enough talent, you can scheme the coverage, you can scheme the inside backer's play, but you need guys to generate pressure. And while Chandler Jones and Devon Kennard make a nice duo right now. If Hassan Reddick is on the roster in week one, I honestly will be surprised. I think it means they couldn't get anything for him because I totally anticipate him being traded somehow, some way. Maybe it's in a draft day to move up or, you know, towards the end of camp to trade him for a pick next year. A guy that's got a cap number $4.3 million, I have a hard time believing is going to be a 15-snap-a-game edge rusher when you could probably get the same type of production from one of your mid-round picks. After that, I go inside backer. You still got Jordan Hicks for a couple of years. Devondre Campbell, you have the potential to extend. And so while you'd love to get someone like an Isaiah Simmons at the top, you could develop someone there potentially and then go to safety. We've already discussed that. They like the safety group there. And the truth is, safety is a position where historically it is not difficult to find in the draft, in any draft, safeties who produce. You can find safeties who produce in the NFL, at least at a capable level, pretty much every draft and in any round. It isn't a premium position. It's an important position, but like Jalen Thompson, who, when you looked at his college production combined with his physical attributes, there was nothing about that said he was going to be a top-tier safety, and yet there are some flashes there at the end of last year, and he was a supplemental pick, so he wasn't even there during the spring. So safety becomes the lowest priority in part because that's a position where you can find players, and the Cardinals traditionally have been able to find players anywhere. They plug in a safety, he produces. And so that's kind of how I'm going. But I will preface everything is that the Cardinals, because of the way they've built the roster this year in terms of where they're at, they could use depth at almost all positions. They don't have any glaring needs they must fill this year. It's a very good position to be in. They are top heavy in terms of roster talent, but that at least puts them in a position to be competitive this year. And so they're not going to have to count on any of their rookies this year like they had to the last couple of years, which is a great change.
Well, and I think you hit it on the head there. And it's something we kind of talked about last week. Now, the offense obviously is going to hopefully be a little bit different this year. But when you look at this roster overall, they're very top heavy in the sense that the talent they have at the top is good to elite. They just lack a wide range of good. They have, you know, so if you talk in terms of three, where you're saying average, good, great, elite, and then, you know, average, below average, needs replaced, and, you know, bust, then you're talking about you have a bunch of guys that are average and below average. I wouldn't say they have a single starter that you look at and go needs replaced. I don't think they have a single starter right now that you would say is a bust on either side of the ball. But I think that they have too few in that good category, and that's where it is. You have, you know, when you look at the 22 starters, and let's just call it 20, you know, 6 to 28 guys that get the majority of the snaps, I mean, 20 of them are probably in that average to below average category. And that's where you find your deficiencies. And that's where that's why you're a 5-win team instead of a 9-win team last year. It's not because you don't have the high end talent. You just don't have the horses to keep up for an entire, you know, 60 minutes over 16 games. I think that's why you're starting to see so much play in the idea of getting trade back, because the idea with the trade back is that now you're going to have a chance to add those, you know, average to good players. And that's where you really need to start focusing. Having elite talent is awesome. Don't get me wrong. I don't want any to think that I'm saying, well, you don't want to draft an elite player. No, no. I absolutely want as many elite players on the Cardinals roster as possible. And I think, you know, they have that in DeAndre Hopkins and Chandler Jones. I think they could still have that with Patrick Peterson. And I think they're on their way to having that with Kyler Murray. But after that, I mean, so now you're talking about four guys where you would put in that top, in those top two tiers. And then you're going, I think, you know, Jordan Hicks is good. Okay, you know, and so you kind of go through the names and, you know, you get some good, but then you start checking a lot of average and below average, and then you go, okay, we need to really fill in that good spot, because it's literally impossible for a team to be elite across the board. It's impossible with salary cap, injuries, you know, all of the outside influences. It's just impossible. But what is possible is to have a team like the Kansas City Chiefs. If you look at the Chiefs, they have, you know, obviously the elite of elite in Patrick Mahomes, but then they have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce on offense. They have three elite offensive players. They might have two in the very good, but then the rest of the squad is good. And that's where you start to say, okay. And then you look at their defense. I mean, they might have a single elite player on defense, but they've got just a ton of good players. And so that's where the Cardinals' focus needs to be, and why, you know, as we get closer, I think you're going to hear more and more about trading back, because there are elite players in this draft. I just don't know if there will be elite players at any of the positions we just talked about available at 8 when they draft.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk. And we're going to begin our positional previews in terms of defense. We're going to talk about the defensive line, the interior. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. So now we move on to the defensive line. We're not talking edge. The Cardinals on their defensive line, they're all interior players playing the 3-4. So we're looking at guys who will play on that defensive line, nose tackle, defensive end. Obviously, there is one big name at the top that's been connected to the Cardinals for a while. If we want to talk about the 8 pick, or even moving back to 14 to 16, let's say, if the Cardinals, or even from anywhere from 10 to 16, there are probably two defensive linemen worth talking about, right? We're talking Derrick Brown and Javon Kinlaw. Would you put anyone else of the defensive interior players in that category in the top 15?
I wouldn't put, you know, anybody else in the top 15, but I'm not sure how comfortable I am putting Brown and Kinlaw in the top 15, just because of the cost, you know, factor of that pick. I mean, you're talking about drafting a player that in today's NFL is probably just going to play about, you know, maybe 70% of the snaps if they're really good, like maybe. And so that's, you know, that becomes the question. Where do you go with these guys? I think that there's, you know, in terms of overall class, I think this is a class where it would actually be really nice to have a second round pick, because I think that's where you're going to see a lot of these players get drafted, and these are the guys that are going to have huge impact in terms of the game. I think when you look at the overall interior defensive line, I think there's two guys that, you know, get talked about more than anybody else, and you mentioned them, Javon Kinlaw and Derrick Brown. I think people get a really odd idea of when you say something like, I wouldn't have Derrick Brown as the top 15 pick.
he's surprisingly polarizing for what he did in college. But there's a reason for that. And we, those of you who are listeners of the show have heard our discussion about Brown as a potential pro.
Right. And so, you know, the problem with Brown is his playing style. You look at him, he's 6'5", 326 pounds. He is a, you know, mammoth of a man, but he is not a guy that moves laterally well. And that is always a concern when you're talking about the interior defensive line from a pass rush perspective. He's not a guy that maybe is going to be a consistent he's not a guy that's going to be a consistent guy that's going to push and collapse the pocket. He'll be more of a guy that collapses the pocket. You know, you look at guys at Brown's size, and his athletic testing, especially in the short shuttle and three cone, is just, I mean, there's no other word than horrendous. And so that's where you look at and you go, okay, that's what the concern becomes, is he a guy that can be more than a Linval Joseph type? And I want people to understand, when I talk about Linval Joseph, I'm saying that as a very, very high compliment. I mean, you're talking about one of the premier defensive linemen in the NFL, but you're talking about a guy that, again, I think Linval Joseph's career high is 65% of snaps played. You know, that's, again, that's not a ton. You're talking about a guy that is known for his ability to control the line of scrimmage so teams can't run the ball. And so that is kind of what he is, to me, more than a dominant pass rusher. Because you look at the way Brown wins in pass rushing, he is a guy that wins via bull rush. He's a guy that wins using straight power. And, you know, even in the SEC, the vaunted SEC that people talk about, that's good, but it's not consistently replicable in the NFL if you don't have a counter, because you're talking about NFL players as opposed to you know, guys that are coaching now or going to be selling insurance and things like that. So that's the one thing. Kinlaw is a bit different because he's the type of guy that you look at and he rushes the passer better. He's a guy that consistently can push the pocket and he can win shooting gaps a little better than Brown does. He's not the power player that Brown is. I don't think anybody would argue with that. I think that he's a guy that you also are wary of because he's a guy that hasn't consistently produce the way you'd hope. He's a guy that has dealt with weight issues already. I think he lost, 40 pounds when he came from junior college to the SEC in South Carolina. He's dealt with lower body injuries, which to me, that's always a red flag for.
Well, and it seems real. It hits really close to home for Cardinals fans, where we had a flashy athletic player who was hampered with lower body injuries, weight, and didn't put up great production. Like, he flashed, but he didn't put up production in college. Fans, you'll remember Robert Kendiche. I'm not saying that the two are comparable in the type of player, just in the type of, there's the maybe the type of player, because Kemdichie flashed on tape, but his numbers weren't great. He was very, very athletic, but he'd get nicked up. We saw the weight issue coming off of the injury. So there's a little bit that it looks like neither player, neither Kinlaw nor Brown, is a guy you want to risk a top 10 pick. Not that Brown, not because he's a risk, but because he's not going to have the impact on the passing game, which today's NFL you want, and Kinlaw because he could bust out. Like, you're going to get good production. You feel good that Brown's going to be a solid to very good NFL player. With Kinlaw, you kind of have boom or bust written on him.
Yeah, and that's what the problem becomes with those two guys. And so then you get into the kind of next set of guys, and there's a really fun group, and that's kind of why I talked about at the outset. Like, this is, I mean, obviously you and I would never go back and change the DeAndre Hopkins trade, but this is definitely a year that if you have a bunch of second-round picks, you're going to be able to kind of find multiple guys that fit what you need in terms of the defensive line. Jordan Elliott is a guy that hasn't gotten a ton of run out of Missouri. You know, he's another one of those long, lean, lean in the sense of he's 6'4 and 302. Like, he's a rocked up type of guy. He's not the bulky guy like Brown is. You know, so Elliott's a guy. I've even started to see him getting flashes in the first round. So that just tells you how deep this class is. Ross Blacklock out of TCU is a guy that the Cardinals have met with, or, you know, virtually met with, however you want to say it. And I tell you what, man, you watch him play, you get this, like, eerie cold sense that you're watching Darnell Dockett again. I mean, like, that's you know, when we've talked about player comps before, and when I talk about, you know, a guy like that, I'm talking about a guy that, you know, at his peak, at his best, could potentially be as good as Darnell Dockett was. You know, that's super high praise. That's a guy that is just, he's a guy that's shown up consistently, that has done a great job at TCU. You have guys like Neville Gallimore at Oklahoma that the Cardinals have met with, another kind of long and lean guy. You've got a guy out of Alabama. I mean, we haven't even talked about Alabama players yet, in Raekwon Davis, who looked like the next guy from Alabama as a true freshman. He had 7 sacks. I mean, that's incredible. And then he had 7 sacks the next 2 years combined. And so, I mean, you've got a bunch of guys this year where it's not a bad draft to have those day two picks, because if you have needs along the defensive line, it is a cornucopia of choices. There's two guys that you and I have talked about and written about that I think are, again, you and I kind of focusing on the idea of that they're not going to make a trade right now. So we're just going to go off the idea that these are guys that they can get at 72 or is it 100, wherever the next pick is after that. But, you know, so the only two guys that they might take, you know, in the first round are Brown and Kinlaw. And Jess and I have voiced our concerns with those guys. You know, one more guy I just want to point out that is a day two guy that's probably going to go way before 72 is Justin Matabuke. I'm not even sure if I said that right.
Matabuke
out of Texas A&M, another kind of smaller interior guy. Got some juice, a guy that I really like. But again, I don't think he's going to be there. So the first guy that you and I have talked about quite a bit is Leke Fotu out of Utah. When you talk about a run stopper, when you talk about a anchor in the middle of your defense, and I know we have a lot of Arizona State fans that listen to this podcast, so you are aware of Fotu and the presence that he is in the middle of a defense. He is a dominant force in the middle of
what, 6'3", 6'5", 330. And he ran the 40 in 5.15 when he tweaked his hamstring. This is a guy who's big and can move.
And he's a guy that has, been in a defense that is phenomenal against the run. He's not going to be a guy that pushes the pocket. So that's why you're talking about him at, potentially being a guy that you take at 72 or even on day three, that you're like, oh man, this is a guy that can, as a rookie, maybe play 30% of the snaps, but then you're talking about a guy that as he grows into the position, that he's going to, continue to get better and better. And I think the last guy for me, and there's some other guys, so I don't want, to think that we're skipping out on people, but just the last guy for me, and he's in the consensus rankings, he's right around that 70 mark. I think he's on the consensus. I think he is at 70. So that's, two picks away, and that's Davon Hamilton out of Ohio State. A true senior. Something that Jess and I will talk about is that these guys that pan out in terms of high end, like that end up being kind of all pro types, are guys that played 4 years and have 4 years worth of production to show. They didn't come on the scene and really just jump up production wise in one single season. And then you have the guys that didn't produce maybe, but they were kind of that lone wolf on their defense. Older prospects from years past, like a Fletcher Cox or a Chris Jones, ironically enough, both out of Mississippi State. You look at guys like that, they had real low production numbers and they came out as juniors and they've done really well. But these other guys, that you look at, you typically see guys that are successful that have played a lot in college and they've put up consistent numbers. We're not talking about a guy that as a freshman when he played, 120 snaps, only had one sack, and then he had, 8, 10, and 12. Like, that's consistency. But we're talking about the guys that played, 3 years and had three sacks coming into their third year and then had 13 sacks or something to that nature. So Davon Hamilton, like I said, is another guy that's been consistent over his career, waited his time to be kind of the anchor of that defense. And then when he finally got it, he ran with it and put up good numbers this year. He's a guy that's consistently played at a high level on a great defense. Again, I don't think he's a guy that's going to be a pass rusher in the NFL, but he could be a guy kind of like a Snacks Harrison, or a Dalvin Tomlinson type that is an interior of the defense presence. And what that does is that creates lanes for your fantastic linebackers to run and make plays.
What I like about the Hamilton and Fotu are actually two of my favorite potential day two picks, because Fotu, there's some untapped potential there as a pass rusher. He's never been asked to rush the passer. But he has some movement to him, which potentially you could get a little. I'm not saying he's going to turn into a 5 or 6 sack guy, but he's a guy that might surprise you in the pros if he's given the right scenario. Take for example Jordan Phillips. When he finally was put in the third down group, he performed at a high level. Now, he performed at a historic level. Is no one his size has had more sacks than he has. In fact, of 330 pounders or greater, only one player has had more sacks ever since sacks have been recorded, and that was Marcell Dareus a few years ago, and he had 10 sacks, and he's on the lower end of 330s. But 340 pounds above, that's Jordan Phillips. He was never asked. He was never on a third down team before in a passing down, and he was able to do it. I'm not saying Fotu's going to do Jordan Phillips type things when he gets the chance, but I think there's some upside there. Hamilton, and I think Daniel Jeremiah said that where he shows up on the film the most is he's the first to congratulate Chase Young, which means he was right there on the play. But Chase Young, the best pass rusher in the country, beat him to it. That's you like to see players like that. Now, in terms of guys at the very end, now there will be defensive. There's probably going to be a defensive line that the Cardinals select that you probably haven't heard of. You probably last year hadn't heard of Michael Dogby. The chances are you hadn't even heard of Zach Allen. The Cardinals tend to, like, in the day three. Where do you see a guy like James Lynch out of Baylor, a guy that the Cardinals have taken a look at? He's got some athleticism, got some intensity to him. Where do you think he falls in the draft?
You know, Lynch is a tough one because, you know, most places considered him like a defensive end type. And so when you look at Lynch, you have a guy that has, you know, put up really solid numbers, but he's a guy that he kind of is like Zach Allen in that you might be needing him to learn a new position and how to play on, you know, even though it is technically a defensive end position, it's, you know, on the inside because you have a linebacker line outside of you. So he's a guy that might have to learn how to play that way. I like Lynch quite a bit, and he's a guy that fits that, you know, Derek Wolf prototype that the Cardinals, or Vance Joseph, I should say, likes. So, I don't think he'd be a bad fit if he's there on day three. I don't even know if he would technically get there because he is a guy that has been productive while at Baylor, and he's got the kind of intangibles. He went through a lot while he was at Baylor, you know, with the Art Briles thing. And so the question becomes, can you get him heavy enough? Do you remember a guy, I think he plays for the Packers now, out of Northwestern a couple of years ago, Dean Lowry?
No, I don't.
He kind of a similar type of prospect to Dean Lowry for anybody that remembers him. So that's, you know, that's the thing. Here's the good thing about James Lynch. And the question becomes, does he maintain his weight when he comes in, because I think he weighed in heavier than what he was listed at Baylor. I want to double check my numbers here. Lynch weighed in. Yeah. So he weighed in at 249, at the combine. And so his three cone and his short shuttle for defensive, like interior defensive linemen, was actually pretty good. So that's, you know, where the question becomes if he is a guy that can move inside, because he does have really, really good change of direction and movement skills. So Lynch is a guy that, you know, is an interesting one. He has a teammate that I was going to mention, but his last name's Roy. I don't even know his first name. I'm not going to lie that I know how to pronounce that. Hold on. Let me look at it again. But he's another interesting one on day three to me, because I think he's a guy that fits in with what the Cardinals want to do as well. So I think there's going to be some day three options in this draft where you can, you know, especially in that fourth round, where you can find a guy like a Lynch, like, you know, like a Raekwon Davis that we talked about. And then what's this kid's name out of Bravion. Yeah, I don't know if I'm saying that right. Bravion. He's kind of an interior guy. He is stout. I think it's thick with two C's, as the kids like to call it. He is 6'1" and 333 pounds. So he's like the reverse AQ Shipley. He's the interior defensive line AQ Shipley. So he's a guy that you look at on day three as maybe being your Corey Peters replacement in a year or two.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the pass rushers, the edge rushers. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move to the edge, where this is not considered a particularly strong class. And probably in terms of what the Cardinals would look at, if they're going to stick at 8, or even if they move all the way to 14, 15, 16, there might not be a top rusher that you'd want to add or need to add. There's a few names out there. Obviously, the biggest one is Chase Young. He's great. He's going to be a top three pick. That's about all we need to say about him, because the Cardinals aren't going to be able to consider that. Then you've got some guys after that. So LSU's Kalaivon Chaisson, how you pronounce that. You've got AJ Epenesa, who goes into that. You've got your quasi-edge guy in Zach Bond out of Wisconsin. Who are some of the guys, if they trade back middle of the first round or pick up a second rounder, who are some of those players that would warrant some consideration? You've already mentioned a guy like Curtis Weaver at the beginning, Boise State guy.
Yeah, Weaver is a guy that I think is going to go on day two. He's not as unathletic coming out in terms of testing numbers as Marcus Golden was, but he's kind of that smaller frame. He actually reminds me a lot of Derek Barnett out of Tennessee a couple years ago that the Eagles took at like 15 or 16. He's a guy that at 6'2 and like 260 pounds, he's kind of soft. I mean, not soft as in playing style, but like he's not rocked up. Like he's not this guy that looks like he's been lifting every day, like you see most of these guys. But his short area quickness numbers were pretty insane. So he's a guy that you can watch there. A guy I was talking with Justin Higdon about today, because he didn't test at the combine, so it's kind of hard to get a gauge of what he could be. But he reminds me a lot of Chandler Jones coming out, is Yeter Gross-Matos out of Penn State. So again, Justin and I are talking trade backs into the middle to late first round. And edge is one of those positions that you really can never have enough of. You can never say, oh, well, we've got Chandler Jones and Devin Kennard, we don't need anybody, because that's never true. So Gross-Matos is one that I like quite a bit. Again, when you're talking about high-end comparisons, Chandler Jones is that it's hard to find a low-end comparison, because, again, we don't have testing numbers, but you just see stylistically he's got some Jones in him with his length and the way he's able to use it to his advantage. Another guy that's been talked about a little bit in terms of late day one, early day two, so again, depending if they move back, like a Julian Aquara out of Notre Dame. He's another one of these guys that is a pass rusher that needs to gain some weight. 6'4", 252, so he's a little lean, but he can move, he can run. He's a guy like that you want, you know, that you're not entirely against drafting because you do have two guys in place. So these guys aren't going to be called upon to play right away. Darryl Taylor out of Tennessee is a senior prospect that's had 20 sacks over the last three seasons. So he's just been a guy that has been kind of consistent and you know, been there every year. He's a guy that, again, now you're talking about maybe you can get him at 72 if you stay there. So this edge class is Chase Young and then a bunch of question marks. But some of these question marks are guys that I think you can get some juice out of. Two guys that I kind of want to put on the spotlight, if you will, for the Cardinals that they've met with, the first or not met with, but that could be there at 72 when they pick again. I don't think Weaver is going to be there. They've met with him. You want to talk about consistent production, 3 years, Weaver's got 38 sacks and I think I told you he's like 48 tackles for loss. So like, yeah, he's a guy that's consistently been successful while he's there. So two guys at 72. The first is Kenny Willicks, I believe is how it's pronounced, out of Michigan State. He's a guy that he plays really, really well against the run. And then he's a guy that has gotten better as a pass rusher. But he's kind of that linchpin guy that we talked about earlier, that a guy that needs – that every team needs. You know, he's never going to be a superstar. He's never going to be a guy that is a Pro Bowler, but he's a guy that you win with consistently, and that is able to be, you know, a continual contributing starter on a good defense, not a bad defense, but a good defense. So, that's one guy. And then Bradley Anae out of Utah. We're going to talk a lot about Utah defense players because they had a really good defense.
I love Anae. And if you had to pair up, like, he doesn't, like, there's not a lot of love for him right now because he's not super athletic, but you watch him play and that Utah defense was so good. And if I have to look at the type of player is, he reminds me of a longer Marcus Golden, the way he plays.
He plays with his hair on fire.
Having that, especially as a secondary, as a rotational pass rusher.
Right, and he's a guy that's relentless and that plays with his, you know, hair on fire consistently, a guy that you don't ever have to worry about if he's going to give you his full effort, you know, in anything. I'm kind of with Jess. I really like him as a player. I've seen, you know, him compared to like a Whitney Mercilus out of Houston. That's, you know, we've talked about this before with Marcus Golden. And so I kind of think it's similar. He's a guy that it'd be really beneficial to have him as your secondary pass rusher, because he is a relentless, tireless type of guy that will be able to pick up the scraps on Chandler Jones pressures. So, you know, if he's there at 72, he's a guy that might be able to, you look at and you go, okay, this fits what we need. Kind of a less athletic, but more juice, if that makes sense. Devon Kennard, in the sense that, you know, he's not as smooth athletically as Kennard, but he's going to make the same plays Kennard does because of the way he plays and the way he's able to do things. A couple tweeners that I've looked at that are going to be late round guys, like a Nick Coe out of Auburn. He's a guy to watch. He didn't do well as a pass rusher this year, but I think he's so big at 6'5 and 280. I think that you can slide him inside, and you might be able to get a guy that's a consistent type of penetrator. Again, we're talking rotational guys. We're not talking about guys that are going to start, especially in year one. And then there was one more guy. I got to remember who it was now in my notes. Hold on 1 second.
There's a super intriguing guy physically who doesn't have a lot of football experience in that, but Kansas is Azur Kamara. Very intriguing in terms of length and speed, but technique and I think where I read his hips aren't great, so he's never going to be a great pass rusher. But in terms of the guy that you have on the field, he has a little bit of potential just because of these. He's super, like, if you got like Chandler Jones type arms and top end straight line speed, he's a guy who you probably can get away with. Kareem Martin was bigger, but in terms of his impact as a special teams player and rotational guy, there's some upside there.
Yeah, and I would agree with Kamara. He's a guy that tested athletically really similar to Darrell Washington, but I was talking to Justin about him, and I said, have you watched Kamara play at all? And he's like, I only watched him at the Senior Bowl when they moved him to off ball and he was the worst player on the field. I'm like, perfect. That makes a ton of sense why he's not getting more talk, because he is super stiff. He's a guy that his straight line speed is and explosiveness is otherworldly, but he's not a guy that has that kind of twitch and bend. So he would probably project more as a off ball guy but he's never played off ball. And we've seen that song and dance once too many times. Anthony Jennings is a guy that I wanted to talk about out of Alabama. One of my always biggest concerns with Alabama guys, it's how much they have left, because they're chewed up and spit out pretty good at Alabama. And he's a redshirt senior, so he's been there basically for 7 years, getting just beaten to crap all the time. But he's well coached, he's disciplined. Again, another fantastic run defender who's got a little pass rush juice in him. They're talking about him on day three. I think he wouldn't be a bad guy to look at on day three, because I think he would be a guy that would fit what the Cardinals are looking for, as in terms of secondary pass rushers and key backups, as Jess pointed out.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk in the world. We're going to move inside, so we're going to go to the linebackers next. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move to the inside. Well, for the Cardinals, it's going to be inside linebacker in terms of player profiling. They're off-the-ball linebackers. The Cardinals are set in terms of the starting lineup as of right now. They've got Jordan Hicks, and they've got Devondre Campbell. After that, they don't have, like, Dennis Gardeck. You probably don't want him playing. While Vance Joseph liked what we saw in the preseason, wasn't pretty. There is one name at the top that is the big name. If they trade back, there's a couple other names, and then there's some specialty guys throughout the rest of the draft. A couple of guys, in particular, that Seth likes. The biggest name, obviously, is Isaiah Simmons, the freak athlete who can do it all. He can rush the passer. He can cover. He can hit. He's got ball skills. There's kind of everything. Now, we don't know if he's going to be available at number 8. He seems like a perfect fit for what the Cardinals would need him to do in year 1. There's some question as to what type of player he will be in the pros. Some, because of his size and speed, say he's got a perfect inside linebacker. And he's played some linebacker. This isn't like Hassan Reddick or Deion Buchanan, where he hasn't played there. So he does have some instincts. He's big for a safety. He could be a great safety, but that almost limits what he could do. Now, he's the size that he has and the length and the speed. He can play off the edge. He could play off the ball, and he can play as a defensive back, either in the slot or in the box or as a deep safety. What I like about his fit for the Cardinals in year one, if he were, in fact, he's probably my favorite player if the Cardinals could pick. He would be, assuming Jeff Okuda and Chase Young are off the board, I'm assuming that, Simmons is my number one player for the Cardinals, and he can do everything like he did in Clemson. You could have him, since he wouldn't have to start on that defense, he could be a situational pass rusher off the edge. He could become part of their, I can't remember what they called it, their Cadillac or their Ferrari. I can't remember what the name was that they, when they put three outside linebackers on the field and they did one defensive lineman, five linebackers to rush the passer. He would make a good, he could be a backup edge rusher. He can play off the ball in coverage. He could line him up as a safety. There's a lot of things he could do in a lot of different packages. And then you could see where he fits best after that, or maybe continue to play him in that sort of role. I love Simmons. He might not be available, but he's my favorite player and would be a perfect fit for the Cardinals for me.
Yeah, and I think it would be a nice match in terms of kind of being able to play positionless football for a year, as you talked about, because you're not going to take Campbell or Hicks off the field consistently for him. So he's going to get reps at a lot of positions and be used to the fullest of his abilities, which is, I think, you know, when you grab somebody like him, that's what you're looking at trying to find. I think you've got a guy in Simmons who has played in a bunch of different roles and has done them well. And I think the worst thing you can do and the last thing that you should do is draft a guy like him and stick him at inside linebacker and just ask him to be an inside linebacker, because I think it would be a waste of his talents. He's really close to a Cam Chancellor type player, a Derwin James type player in terms of ability to change the game from the defensive side of the ball because of all the different things he can do. Remember, Derwin James was an all pro as a rookie. And so that's what I think he can be. When you look at this linebacker class, this is a class that's got a bunch of day one starters. And, you know, the Cardinals went into this offseason needing that. And they left this offseason not needing that. So when you look at it from that perspective, maybe grabbing a guy doesn't make sense. But that's why Simmons would be probably the best fit, as Jess said, in terms of getting playing time. Because I don't think any of these other guys are going to beat out Hicks or Campbell. Now, they're both, you know, they could be great insurance policies, but they're not guys that are going to beat out. And I don't think Simmons will, for that matter, either. And so then it comes down to, again, where are they going to go, in this draft, and how do they work? If they're trading down, adding, you know, a late first or early second round pick, you're going to have three guys that you can kind of watch. Kenneth Murray is a guy that they've met with out of Oklahoma. Reminds me a lot of like a D'Amico Ryans type. He's a guy that is loved by NFL personnel guys. He is a guy that people love because he is a true kind of defensive leader, and a guy that understands the game and is incredibly athletic, 6'2", 240, and he had incredible combine numbers and what he did at Oklahoma. He was he was the leader of that defense. I think another guy that is going to go either late round one or early day two is Patrick Queen out of LSU, who kind of had his coming out party at the national title game, where he was probably the best defensive player for either team on the field, and that includes Isaiah Simmons. Queen just had a great game. He was all over the place. He's kind of like a Telvin Smith type, where he's a true off-ball linebacker. can he play the will in a 34? That's kind of where the question becomes. And so to me, that's, if that's the question, is that a guy you want to, if you, is that a guy you want to grab, you know, in the middle to late first round or a second round pick if you get one. Jordan Brooks out of Texas Tech, a guy Cliff Kingsbury would be familiar with. Again, he's more similar to Murray in terms of style of play, a true inside backer, can play strong or weak on a 43, but in the Cardinals, you know, defense, he actually profiles really similar to Jordan Hicks coming out. So, you know, that would be – but obviously young Jordan Hicks, not the guy that's had all the leg injury problems that this Hicks has had. So, you know, he's a guy that would, again, be a nice fit for the Cardinals. But the question will be, where is he going to go? One more guy on – in round two, and that's Willie Gay out of Mississippi State. You know, 6'1", 245. He tested really, really well at the combine. Again, most of these guys tested really well, and nobody knows about it because of what Isaiah Simmons did. But his explosive numbers were otherworldly. He ran a 4.46 40. Again, 6'1", 243, 4.46 40. He had a vertical jump of 39.5 and then a broad jump of 11 feet 4 inches. So he, from an explosive standpoint, he's one of the most athletically gifted players in this in this draft. I don't know, you know, why he's not getting more talk outside of he got suspended this season because he cheated on a test. You know what they say, as you know, as a school teacher, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. So that's, you know, I don't know if I can blame him for that, but you know, and he was just there to play football. Let's be completely honest with that. He wasn't there to learn anything. So then there's two guys at 72, and I'll start with the guy that some people like. I like him. I think he's a good player. And Troy Dye out of Oregon. Again, you're talking about a incredibly athletic, lean, linear type of backer. I don't know if he's a guy that you'd want to take a chance on in this climate because he didn't test at the combine, and so you don't have numbers on him. And his playing weight at Oregon was listed at, I think, 224. So he's 6'4 and 224 pounds. So he's a very lean, you know, shooting guard type of build. It would have been nice to see if he was able to
test. Joseph doesn't play linebackers that way under 230 pounds traditionally. So
yeah. Well, I think for this next guy he should make an exception because to me, the best linebacker in this draft, and yes, I mean that over everybody else, is Akeem Davis Gaither out of Appalachian State. He is the most enjoyable player to watch in this draft for me, including CeeDee Lamb and Jonathan Taylor, who I think are, you know, sure thing type of guys coming out. Akeem Davis Gaither played at Appalachian State. He is a smaller guy, 6'1", 225, but he is a true inside linebacker. He is a guy that understands the linebacker position. He is a guy that is incredibly athletic. And he is probably the only competition that Simmons has in terms of coverage ability as a linebacker. He is incredibly smooth. But the biggest thing is he's so instinctual as a player that I've actually talked to people that compare him to, like, Jalen Smith of the Cowboys. So when you're talking about the understanding of the game, the angles, the routes to take to the ball, he is, to me, without question, the guy in this class. If he was there at 72, I think he would be a no-brainer, because I think he would give you a similar productivity to Simmons, and I think he is a more natural inside backer in the 34 defense than Simmons would be.
A couple of names that I've run across that I wasn't aware of before. One is Marcus Bailey out of Purdue, a guy that's coming off who's got some injury red flags, coming off a knee injury, but could be a nice maybe round three, round four pickup for a team because the skill set is all there. I've read a couple of things. I don't remember him when ASU played, but a guy who would be more of your specialty guy, who could be a coverage linebacker, Davion Taylor out of Colorado, is another name they run across. A player who the Cardinals have spoken to multiple times, Evan Weaver out of Cal. He is a tackle machine. He's a little more athletic than you think, and he's probably what every football coach wishes he had in a linebacker, although he probably has a little bit of a limited athletic ceiling. But me, you know, he's got that linebacker mentality. He collects tackles. He can move a little bit. And he's a guy that I know the Cardinals have talked to a couple of times. Cutter next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll move on to the secondary, cornerbacks. Take a look at what the Cardinals can get there. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We move to the defensive secondary to cornerbacks. Now, the number one corner on the board is what we believe to be Jeff Okuda of Ohio State. Probably a top three pick. Don't need to talk much about him. He's considered the complete package. He's talented. He can cover. He's athletic. Not a hyper-athletic, but he's also very, very clean as a coverage guy. Now, after that, the Cardinals probably, according to most people, it's going to be a little high, a little rich to take another corner at number eight. But it wouldn't surprise. And there are some names in the first round, especially if they trade back, that could come up for Arizona. And then there's lots of corners for the mid first round to, you know, there's some names throughout the draft we can find. A name that's rising lately in terms of talent is Florida's CJ Henderson. We also see a couple other names. Jeff Gladney out of TCU is another name. The Cardinals actually talked to him. He's not. I've seen his name bounce around anywhere to early teens to late first round. Could you possibly see the Cardinals surprising and taking a guy like Henderson or maybe Gladney at number eight? Or would that be the 14, 15, 16 trade back target potentially?
Yeah, I think it'd be the trade back ideally. Henderson is a guy that played in the SEC, had the numbers to at least go with the idea of taking him in the first round. You know, he's a guy that is the the size and speed profile of a lockdown corner. And corner and pass rusher, you know, those are kind of, like I talked about earlier, they're kind of those positions that you never say, oh, well, we have enough of those, because you really can't. I mean, it's impossible to have enough of those. So, you know, Henderson is a guy at 6 feet, 204, you know, had really, really good testing numbers. His 40 yard was 4.39. Good jumps. He didn't do the change of directions, which kind of disappointing when you want to see what he can do. But he is a true kind of outside corner. And so when you look at him, he's a guy that is a good coverage guy. He's a guy that you look at and you see a guy that could be a potential number one corner taking over for Patrick Peterson if the Cardinals decide not to re-sign him. You know, I don't think that they're not going to re-sign him. But again, you can never have too many of those. He tests out similarly to Marshawn Lattimore. He's a little bit heftier than Lattimore was, but I mean, he tested out similarly, excuse me, easy enough to say. So he fits the profile of, you know, that early round cornerback pick. Again, you know, 6'1", 204, great testing numbers. I think the biggest thing that you look at with him is he's got shorter arms than you would probably like. They're not, it's not like a deal breaker, but I mean, they are a little shorter than you normally see. And then the question that somebody asked me or somebody texted me, and it's, you know, I don't blame players, but he is either one, not overly physical, or two, was playing to make sure that he got to his NFL payday this year while he was at Florida. I hate saying that, so, you know, I'm not trying to call the guy out or anything, but that's, you know, that has been a complaint that was shared with me about Henderson the player. And so if it is a concern, I don't know if it's one that you want to try to address, especially with the eighth pick in the draft.
Now, if they do trade back and they get picked up around the second round, who are some other names that are worth mentioning? Late first round, top of the second round, mid-second round type players. And then who are guys – now, I know there's a couple of names that we're talking probably late day two and then later into day three, as you've got Amik Robertson and you've got Chris Williamson. But those are names of players that I know they've talked to there later. But who else should should Cardinals fans be aware of, especially if they trade back or if they get a pick in the second round?
You know, with the second round picks, it's tougher this year because I think Gladney's a guy that is probably going to go in the second round. He's interesting because he's a smaller guy at 5'10", 190. So I'm actually surprised that they're interested in him, not because he's not good. I think he's very good, but, you know, just a little surprised. Bryce Hall out of Virginia is a guy, 6'1", 202, has had a really, really nice career at Virginia, and came back and didn't play as well and probably cost himself a first-round pick. But he's put up consistent numbers, and he dealt with an ankle injury that everybody's aware of all season. So that's kind of the question on him. You know, and then you look at potential round three guys. Again, it's hard for me because Joseph, I'm not sure what his what his game is in terms of what he's looking for. The kid out of Auburn, Noah, something with an IG to start with. He's really, again, talking about athletic, can move, explosive, but I'm not sure that he's the guy at 5'10 that fits the profile. But again, do we even know what the profile is for Vance Joseph in terms of what he wants? Oh, I missed a guy out of in round two. Sorry, Jalen Johnson out of Utah. I told you we were going to talk a lot about Utah guys. Very lean, 6'1", 190, but he's done really well against some formidable competition, including Ayuk, who's a guy that's going to get drafted in the second round. So he, you know, or on day two. So he's a guy to kind of keep an eye on. I like this corner class, but I'm more of a guy that likes them in the third round. You hit on Amik Robertson. Amik is a ton of fun to watch play on the field. He's crazy, ferocious. He kind of reminds you of Matthew in the way he plays. He's not obviously not as skilled as Ty was coming out, but in terms of fearlessness at 5'9", you know, 200 pounds, he's a guy that you look at and go, man, he really does think he's the best player on the field. Who's the guy that's got the kind of odd wife? What was his name?
Oh, yeah.
I can't but you guys will know who I'm talking about. But, you know, he kind of reminds me of him. I don't know where everybody has AJ Terrell out of Clemson. I've seen some list him as like a top 50 or so, as like, yeah, like a top 50 player. I've seen others list him as a top 75 player.
Brent Grimes.
Yeah. So, you know, that feistiness that Grimes has where it's like, no, I'm the best player on the field. Like that's how Amik plays. And, you know, again, corners in the third round, I don't think you can ever go wrong with that.
We're going to wrap this section up. Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best part of Cardinals talk in the way. We're going to wrap this up, talk about the safeties, a position of the least amount of need, but a position where you almost feel like the Cardinals will draft. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best part of Cardinals talk on the web. It feels like safety won't be on the table, even if they trade back in the first round. Nonetheless, safety is a position where they have talked to a few players. Would you say that the Cardinals are going to be in play at all for players like Xavier McKinney or Antoine Winfield or other of those top safety prospects in the draft? Grant Delpit, for example.
Yeah, I think they will be in the if they're wanting to trade back. You're talking about guys that, while it may not be a need that would upgrade your team and become, you know, incredibly important parts of your team. So I think there are a couple guys that you could see them be interested in if they were to trade back. You know, you hit on two of them and Xavier McKinney. Man, he's my favorite player at the safety position in this draft, but I'm a sucker for Alabama safeties. I just think that they're so well coached and so well rounded as players that it's hard to not love the way that they play the game. I don't think he's going to be there, and you know, I don't think they're going to trade back. So I don't know if, you know, he's a guy, but he's a guy on your defense that you would absolutely love to have kind of being the quarterback of that defense, the leader of that defense. You know, he's kind of like Malcolm Jenkins was for the Philadelphia Eagles, where he's just a guy that understands his job and but he also literally understands everybody else's job on the field and how to get him lined up. You know, you can even compare him to a souped up version of Rashad Johnson, so he's a little more athletic and a little more of a guy that can do a little more stuff, and he's not just a guy that's going to be kind of your free safety type. Del Pitt's an interesting one because a lot of people – he's another polarizing prospect in a draft full of them, it seems like. I like Del Pitt. I think he's a good player. I think he I think he's overly aggressive and that he takes chances that he probably shouldn't take. But I also don't mind that if you're not the free safety. If you're a true free safety, then, you know, it's harder to justify it. But Del Pitt's a phenomenal athlete. He's a guy that's lined up all over the field, 6'3", 205 pounds. So, he's a guy that's played slot and free safety. He's played in the box as a strong safety. So he's done a little bit of everything for the best team in college football, and was one of the leaders of their defense. If they're looking for a guy that can play the true kind of single high position, I think the kid out of Cal, Ashton Davis, is a nice player. Not sure where most people see him. I don't know if he's a late day two, early day three type, but super rangy, not really a box guy, but more of that, like I said, true type of free safety guy. And then there's a couple small school guys that have been getting a lot of run. I know his last name's Chin. Jeremy Chin.
Jeremy Chin, yeah.
Yeah, out of Southern Illinois or South Illinois. I'm not sure what it is. But he's a Saluki, I think, right? And he's an interesting one, 6'3", 221, and put up really, again, eye-opening numbers. He ran a 4.45 40, had a 41-inch vertical and 11.6 broad jump, again, at 221 and 6'3", and then put up 20 reps on the bench. If they're looking for a guy that can potentially play with Buda Baker, then I think, and take some pressure off of Buda, I think he's a guy that could do that. And then the other small school guy is Kyle Duggar. And again, another big boy, 6'1", 220 pounds. He had a huge Senior Bowl week. And then he backed it up again with these crazy testing numbers, 4.49 40, 42-inch vertical, 11.2 broad jump. Explosive is, I think an understatement for these guys. When you look at what he did at the Senior Bowl, he had a really, really good game and a great week of practice. So, we'll see if he's a guy that at 72 is around that could potentially be a guy that they look at to add to a really stocked safety position, but a position you typically draft because there are need every single year, because you need them for special teams and you need guys that can rotate in when guys need a break.
A guy that I know the Cardinals looked at is Gentry. I think you wrote about him as well, or at least tweeted about him. Notre Dame's Aloe Gilman. High character, high intensity type player. He ranges anywhere. He's the type of player. He was a captain. And he's probably, you'd say he's probably a D3 player.
Yeah, and he reminded me a lot of Xavier Woods, who's now the starting safety for the Dallas Cowboys. So, he's the type of guy that you draft in round 5, round 6, not expecting them to be more than outstanding special teams. And I do mean outstanding. Gilman was a captain of the defense, but his best work was done consistently on special teams. And so, like, he's a guy that you get and then maybe replace Chris Banjo next year with as kind of the defense or the special teams captain. But he's got some talent and some ability back there too. So I don't think he's, you know, should be overlooked, but he would 100% be first and foremost a special teams guy. And he is, like I said, he is phenomenal as a special teams guy.
Anybody else that should be worth mentioning as players you might see pop up in day three?
Again, I don't know where most of these guys rank comparatively, so I'm just going to throw a couple names that I've watched that I haven't heard a ton of buzz on from big schools. Geno Stone. We didn't talk about Antoine Winfield. I think he's going to go on day three because of his size at 5'9", and only 200 pounds. And he's, again, he's kind of like Buda Baker. So teams are going to have to fall in love with the player, like, you know, the Cardinals did with Buda and Ty Matthew, because from a size perspective, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where people rank them. But he's an interesting one on day two to watch if he gets down there, because could he be, you know, if things hit a snag, could he be like a Buda Baker replacement if need be? Geno Stone was one I wanted to mention out of Iowa. Again, I don't know where people kind of rank him, but he always caught my eye when I watched him in Iowa. And then he did a nice job at the combine. But he's he ran a slow 40. And so that, you know, is concerning to people. But a 4-year starter at Iowa or a 3-year starter at Iowa is an impressive type of player. And then we mentioned Gilman. So that was kind of the last guy. So, yeah.
All right. And with that, we will wrap up this show. We'll be back in a week to talk our mock draft and the week after to react to what the Cardinals have done during the draft. So thanks for listening. On behalf of the Rise Up Secret Podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back in a week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up C-Red.